The Pewter Nation podcast is presented by Westshore Financial, the official financial sponsors of PewterReport.com. For life insurance, investment, and retirement strategies, Westshore Financial's Chris Garrido can help you plan for the future and protect your family's finances. Call Chris at 813-434-0037 for a free, no-obligation conversation today. And now, get ready for the new Pewter Nation podcast.
Guess who's back?
72HourPrint.com is the official print partner of PewterReport.com. For printing, signage, and apparel needs, contact our partners at 888-72-HR-PRINT or 72HourPrint.com. That's 72HRPRINT.com.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast, a very special edition, as we have reunited the band, the Blues Brothers, three of us.
Guess who's back?
We are back again with our main man, the hair himself, the man bun,
Mr.
Trevor Sikkema. And I have no idea what's going on with the hair this time.
I don't either.
Can you describe it?
No, I don't think I've gotten a haircut in like 4 or 5 months.
It shows.
Legitimately.
Yeah.
And I think I'm scared to lose it again.
Have you washed it?
That's why.
Since Paris?
No, of course not.
No, of course not.
Yeah. You know, when you like wear a jersey and it's, you know, special or whatever, yeah. You know, I went to Paris and I was like, oh, now I'm never going to wash my hair because, you know, I went to a special place.
The thing is,
people do that, right? That's the thing.
You've always like looked like Steven Stamkos, right? That's kind of been the doppelganger. But you kind of going with the long hair now a little bit. It's like Bradley Cooper-esque. You've got like a little bit of A Star Is Born vibe.
Wow.
That's exactly what I'm going for.
I know, yeah.
If only I could play guitar.
That's right.
And sing.
I was thinking
and
more
be
like
good looking.
Mo Howard.
But other than those three things, I think it's spot on.
Right.
Yeah. And you had any acting talent whatsoever.
I don't.
You don't have any of that.
I really don't.
Well, the other voice you heard, of course, was Mr. Scott Reynolds. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing great.
And we don't have any special guests today, but Matt and Taylor are also here. We may allow them to chime in a little bit.
Yeah, they're special in their own right.
I'm just going to make this quick so I don't waste all my words and all my time.
Taylor Six Chin Jenkins, and how you doing, Matt?
I'm great. Three mics with five people is a bit much. So.
That works.
Works perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Well, we have, of course,
a
wonderful title sponsor since you were here last, Trevor. And Scott's going to tell you all about our wonderful friends at Westshore Financial.
The Pewter Nation podcast is presented by Chris Garrido at Westshore Financial, the official financial sponsor of PewterReport.com. So whether it's life insurance, investments, or retirement strategies, turn to Chris Garrido at Westshore Financial. It's that simple. After one conversation with Chris, I realized I didn't have the right plan together for my financial future. I didn't have enough life insurance to protect my family today or enough retirement income for my future. It's never too late to start planning for retirement, but make the call today, Buccaneer fans. Don't wait. I've known Chris for over a decade, and I've been a Westshore Financial client before he became a sponsor for the Pewter Nation podcast. So I trust him with my retirement. You can do the same. Call him today, and you'll form that same opinion. Protect your family. Call 813-434-0037 for a complimentary, no obligation, preliminary conversation. You're going to want Chris in your corner, and you'll be glad that you did.
I'm going to get Chris in my corner, Scott.
You need to.
I mean, I've thought of a million different ways to protect my family's future, and I've determined that trying to videotape and sell bootleg copies of The Lion King is not a good idea, as I was escorted out of the movie theater last night, and they took my video camcorder.
That's a federal crime.
And I actually believe that you would do that. I really do.
I would never, ever do that.
What are you doing? He's like, I got a side business.
I'm not going to lie.
I'm videotaping movies.
I've bought a few from the guy on the street corner.
Of course. Yeah.
But I would never do it myself.
He's got a steady hand.
Helping out the local economy.
Of course. Yes.
True story. I was escorted out of a movie theater by the Winter Haven Police Department about 10 years ago when I was at a special screening of an Elvis film. Now, I literally was just taking a photo of the screen. But the projectionist thought I was bootlegging.
Oh, yeah.
And I literally, right before the movie was over, two Winter Haven cops came in, grabbed me, and carried me out. That's a swear
amazing.
On the Bible true story. Yep.
That's awesome.
Did you put in the back of a cop car or no?
No, they didn't get me that far.
Oh, okay.
I finally was like, this is ridiculous. I showed him, I just took a picture. I showed him my phone, so.
Your run-ins with the law are so interesting. It's like.
I know, nothing cool.
You
I mean,
look like such a bad boy, so your run-ins with the law are not surprising, I guess. But then they're like, oh, what'd you get in trouble for? And you're like, being mistaken for bootlegging a movie and fishing without a license.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, that's not
just
that
in
bad.
Case you're a newcomer to the Pewter Nation podcast, and we'll get to Buck's content in about 30 seconds. Hang with me here. You did get arrested for fishing without a license.
I like to also say it was murder one, but technically the charge was fishing without a license.
People is like if they're trying to step you, just be like, yeah, check the police record.
That's right. Yeah. You can find me on the Hillsborough County Sheriff's website.
That's the line. Yeah. That's the line right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And you still can.
Yeah, I had those charges reduced from murder to fishing without a license.
Yeah, it was murder one. We pled down. Had a great attorney. Got a $68 fine. Spent 3 hours on Orient Road, and I was good. Literally had to go surrender myself. No joke. Anyway, we've already went over that story.
Well, listen.
But ask me if I have a fishing license now.
I bet you have one now.
Hell no.
No, rebel, outlaw. Care. Look at
I'm
you.
I'm not scared. Bring it on. I'll tell you where I live, police.
Gotta edit this part out of the podcast.
Listen, if you're sensing the excitement that Trevor's back, I think that it only can be matched by Jameis Winston's level of excitement today.
My lord.
At the podium.
That man
giddy.
Loves football.
Yeah.
I just the whole time he was just all smiles, was ready for it. Now,
wait, hang on. Let me just kidding. Had to get that in there real quick. Trevor's back. I had to do a quick interruption for all the people out
Captain
there.
Captain Interruption.
Really, yeah, really not interrupting. Yeah. I
Captain Interruption.
To say.
I
wanted
I really
to throw
did.
You off.
I really did. Okay, it's, you good. Know, it's annoying when nobody interrupts you when you're so used to it for so long. Jameis was pretty great though, and he did give the stereotypical. Well, Rick, I just got to do my job.
Yeah.
You know, he gave that a little bit too much when he was doing his press conference, but that's just a patented Jameis thing. He's not going to give you a ton of details.
Right.
But you can tell the new life that Bruce Arians has brought to the building. I mean, the first thing that he said, hey, what's different about Bruce Arians being here? And the very first thing is he says it with a smile, and he's like, he'll shoot it to you straight.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to think that, you know, we can just get into it now. Mark, you've talked about this before. That gap and lack of trust that there might have been between Dirk Koetter and Jameis Winston, especially kind of down near the end of the season when the tenure was coming to an end, it just seemed like there was a rift in between there. And I just wonder if that was kind of built up from, hey, maybe this guy doesn't have my best interest, or maybe this guy's looking out a little bit too much for himself. Maybe it was on both sides. There was a misunderstanding there. But with Bruce Arians, you just don't feel like that's going to be a thing anymore.
Yeah,
the quarterback-coach relationship should be as good as it's ever been for Jameis Winston, including back when he was with Jimbo Fisher at Florida State.
We asked Bruce, I didn't ask Bruce, but somebody asked Bruce about, you know, is that part of the reason you came back? And he said, yeah, that was a big part of it, was Jameis Winston. And, you know, Dirk Koetter was given Jameis Winston. It wasn't Dirk Cutter's first choice. Marcus Mariota was the guy that he wanted, which we still just as a head-scratcher because Marcus Mariota's skill set does not fit what Dirk Koetter offense requires
doesn't.
A quarterback to do.
Well, and remember, too, Dirk was the offensive coordinator, so when you say he was given, that's why. Lovie Smith was the head coach in 2015, Jameis' first year.
I think that new head coaches often don't want the players who are going to get in the way of their control. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's pretty natural for a first-year head coach to be worried about a lot of the things that are around them. You know, like controlling that, making sure it's how they do it. Making sure there aren't X factors that derail their plan or anything like that. And Jameis is kind of an off-script guy in a lot of ways. And it really works out for you sometimes, as we saw in 2013 with Florida State's national championship. You know, when you let the guy loose and he's on, he's one of the best quarterbacks that I ever saw in college. But on the other hand, sometimes it can really get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. And if you meddle a little bit too much with that, then the problems happen too often. I think that was kind of the case with Dirk Koetter. And I don't think that he was ever comfortable. You know, I think he said the words out loud. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to let Jameis be Jameis. But I don't think he was ever comfortable really letting Jameis be Jameis.
He would have preferred Jameis Winston to be Matt Ryan, right?
Correct.
The cookie cutter guy, yes sir, no sir. This is the way I'm going to do it exactly the way you draw it up.
I'm going to program you this way, and you're going to be that way.
Right. Well, I think that rift is kind of highlighted just in this past offseason when you hear Jameis say things like, what's the biggest difference? Is Bruce Arians is a straight shooter. And I don't remember if you heard early in the offseason when Dirk Cutter was back in Atlanta, and he said, I think I always took for granted how accurate Matt Ryan is.
Right.
And that's just these little slights, these little shots. Mm-hmm. And they're not, I don't think they're blown up because they're very little comments and probably not a whole lot behind them intentionally. But they're things that you hear and you go, okay, it makes a lot of sense why both of these guys are saying the things that they are.
And the thing, too, is this, you know, Jameis's demeanor, like, honestly, it looked like he had had half a pot or maybe a full pot of coffee. He was so amped up and mm-hmm. so jacked up to be just talking to the media. He came out, he's like, hi, media. I mean, he was, like, right. excited yeah. to be back in the building.
I don't think he said, hi, media.
Well, he said something like that.
It was pretty much like that, yeah.
It's like, welcome to training camp or something, yeah. you know? Yeah.
Right. But my point is
Jameis would be an awesome camp counselor.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jameis would be have you so seen him at these camps? Yeah. Have you seen
We're
him
doing archery now, yeah. kids. Come on, let's go.
You know? Oh, my Lord.
I say the guy's going to be a preacher when he gets out of this. He would be one of those great TV preachers. He's very animated. He yeah. uses his hands.
Be a great youth pastor.
Yeah.
Just clapping his hands the whole time.
Right. But here's the thing. Contrast that to first day of training camp last year when arguably, and we've seen him now yeah. for 4 years. This is year five, but he had his worst training camp practice mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah.
That first practice, because that was where he was dreading talking to the media. Mm-hmm. He had been suspended during the summer, mm-hmm. right? He hadn't talked.
Right.
And he had an absolutely horrific practice. It was indoors, and his whole vibe and demeanor.
Really, his first few practices were really bad, yeah. yeah. We
it's just
it wasn't yeah it wasn't Jameis the Jameis Winston we were used to seeing, that's right. for sure.
Last year was a crazy year, just from everything that happened with him getting suspended yeah. and then the training camp with, you know, what seed is he in the depth chart, how much you giving him versus Fitzpatrick, like, is there then all of a sudden in the regular season is there a quarterback competition, Jameis gets benched for the Cincinnati game, yep. all this kinds of stuff, and then at the end of the year he kind of comes on and has a good year, and I just look back on what 2018 was and I'm like, that was probably one of the most wild years I'll ever cover, just for everything that happened top to bottom with the coaching.
You missed the Josh Freeman, Mike Glennon year. That was the crazy
2013?
Year. Yeah.
Was it even nuts. More of a circus? I mean,
yeah.
I guess, but
it's kind of in the same realm. I see yeah. where you're going. And yeah. then you cap it off with the coach getting fired at the end of the season.
Coach
yeah.
uncertainty, GM uncertainty, right. like all this kind mm-hmm. of stuff.
Todd Monken takes over play calling.
Right, they fired the defensive coordinator. Like, yeah, the yeah. offensive coordinator takes over play. It was just there was no shortage of storylines. Yeah.
The only
year.
Thing missing was MRSA.
And I think
that's true. That's
yeah, true. All that was missing was a disease. I think that who brought this up? Somebody asked Arians the question, hey, there's nobody holding out. There's nobody asking for a trade. There's no coaching staff uncertainty or whatever. And he's like, this got to feel good, right? And Bruce kind of smiled, and he's like, yep, everybody's yep. here. You yeah. know, and that just doesn't happen very often. It yeah. really
well,
doesn't.
Especially coming to a new team like this. This is his first training camp in Tampa Bay. And, you know, and the only thing that is disappointing is Jason Pierre's,
right.
you know, right. his right. car wreck, and that was months ago, so that they've known about that and prepared for that. And but it really, one of the things that really stood out to me from Bruce's press conference was just, he said, in all of his years of being in the NFL, what a special, mature rookie class this is. And when you look at this rookie class, Devin White's going to be a starter. Sean Murphy Bunting will probably start, I'm guessing, at nickel or on the outside. Jamel Dean will push for a starting role. Mike Edwards will be in the starting conversation at strong safety.
He'll be the starter.
Yeah. Scotty Miller might start on special teams as a kicker, punt returner, or both, and mm-hmm. then he'll see some action at wide receiver.
Right.
Scotty Miller is also going to be one of our training camp diary guys, along mm-hmm. with Kevin Minter. Be sure to check that out, Pewter Nation, if you haven't read those on pewterreport.com yet. But a lot of rookies from this class, which was not heralded on draft day by a lot of fans and some in the media.
Don't leave out that gay guy, Matt Gay.
Yeah. He could be the kicker, too. Yeah. This is a big rookie class. These guys have to produce.
Yeah.
And so when you get someone like Bruce Arians saying, yeah, this is the most mature, ready-to-play group of guys I've ever seen come in as rookies, that speaks volumes.
Now, I don't know how much of – because let's face it, even a guy like Bruce Arians, who everyone says is a straight shooter, and he'll tell it like it is and all that kinds of stuff, even Bruce knows the game. There's got to be some coach speak here and there. So yeah. I don't know how much I really believe him saying this most mature rookie class. But he did say, whether it's the most or not, he said that the guys that we drafted, and I was one of those people that wasn't really sure about this Bucks class.
Right.
You know, I was pretty vocal on Twitter when they were picking guys. I was like, man, okay, like, I get it if they're going this direction, but they got to be going this direction. And like the Jamel Dean thing, it's like, okay, I get it, but that's pretty early for a guy who's had a ton of knee problems and things like that. You know, Scotty Miller, it's like, all right, but kind of anybody can play that position. It's just not just going to be a one-on-one. And I was even at the top with Devin White. I was like, Devin White's a damn good football player.
Yeah.
But for a team that struggled so much to produce pass rush, I just wasn't sure about it. So not that Devin White's going to be a bad player, I think, anything like that, but I had my question marks about this draft class, but I also said that if the coaching staff drafted the guys that they want and they're going to be difference makers, doesn't matter. It's all going to be fine. And that kind of comes around to the coaching matters point.
Yeah.
Arians talked about that a little bit today when we were listening to him. He said a lot of the losses that they had last year, it's Bucks beating Bucks.
Yeah.
Like
he said they should have been 8-8.
He said they should have been 8-8.
Yeah.
And that's why it's wild that I see some of these people predicting, and I'm actually going to get into this in my first cover three that I'm going to do next week. Some of the people that are predicting the Bucks to go like 3-13 and stuff like that, I just think is wild. Even if you have your biggest doubts about this team, you've got to know that the coaching's got to be different. If you knew anything about why this team struggled
better
last year, starting quarterback was out for 3 weeks, quarterback controversy, a lot of coaching blunders. None of that exists this year. So even if you look at the Bucks roster and go, okay, maybe it's not my favorite roster in the league.
Right.
They won 5 games last year with that offense. Mm-hmm. It's no different.
I was doing a radio hit earlier this week, and I was asked, does this team have the talent to stack up in the NFC South? And I said, yeah, it actually does. I said, keep in mind, they split with the Saints. Right.
Yeah.
They went to New Orleans and they beat the Saints at their place week one.
Outdueled them at their own game.
They had a halftime lead here against the Saints at Ray J. Again, you know, against New Orleans.
Yep.
And this is a team that got spanked up in Carolina, but then came back down here in Tampa and whipped up on the Panthers pretty good. And then lost to the Falcons both games by a total of 7 points combined.
Yeah, what happened in the Falcons games? Last second field goal that won the game.
Yeah.
In a game at the end of the year that didn't matter.
Yep.
And in the one before, Jameis threw 2 boneheaded interceptions that really put him down a hole, and they still almost
won the game, and the defense couldn't stop anybody in that game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Julio Jones had 380 yards.
How do you take the context of what the Buccaneers' record was last year? And to be fair, I understand national people who are picking these records. You don't know all the details about every team.
Exactly.
But as somebody who did cover them last year, I don't know how you look at the context of how the losses came about the way they did and basically automatically think, okay, there's 7 right off the bat that they should have even had last year with last year's roster.
Right.
Now you get rookies that you think are going to be a little bit better, swapping a couple different players in and out, and you get a lot more experienced coaching staff.
Yeah.
I've got to think that gets them at least a couple extra wins than what people predicted.
And
you know?
Another year for Jameis Winston under his belt. I mean, Jameis should be a better quarterback with or without Arians, but he does have Arians this year because he's just going into his 5th season. I mean, quarterbacks get better every year that they play, and he's had another season under his belt, dealt with a lot of adversity last year, and we saw Jameis Winston play his best football down the stretch late in the year. Mm-hmm. If he can continue those type of decision-making type games, you know, there's no reason that this team isn't at a bare minimum what they were last year, but I, you know, 8-8 anyway, I think is a fair isn't too much to ask for this football team.
I also think too, when you look at this roster and the way that Jason Light and Mike Greenberg have constructed it from a salary cap perspective, so many guys on 1 year deals or in the last year of their contracts. You mentioned Jameis Winston, right? Vernon Hargreaves, this is a make or break year for him in Tampa. Mm-hmm. He had his 5th-year option picked up. It's not guaranteed, so they can simply cut him at the end of the year. So you have Hargreaves. You got Noah Spence, who is in a do-or-die year. You've got Shaq Barrett coming from
Denver.
Right?
Perryman.
1 year deal. Brashad Perryman, Deion Buchanan, Carl Nassib's in a contract year. DeMar Dotson, you know, is probably wants to play another year or two. At right tackle, he's in a contract year. So there's a lot of guys that have a lot to prove this year.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, that's when you see guys stand and deliver.
Even a guy like Peyton Barber, who's given a shot.
Peyton Barber.
You know, got another year on his deal. But you know, to the position where he can make a lot of money next year if he has a 1,000-yard season, whether it's here or somewhere else.
They're, I think, putting themselves in a pretty good position to either see what they have and it works, mainly with Jameis Winston, or be able to get away from it quickly and completely and start something new and be able to kind of reload in that aspect.
But don't you think Jameis is going to have a complete meltdown for them to pass on him next year? Because they may not offer him a long-term contract, but they could also
franchise him.
They could franchise
for one more year.
And I suppose, but, man, it'd be hard for me to think, okay, even with the uncertainty that's happened over the last 4 years, if he can't get it done under Bruce Arians, unless his supporting cast around him just really blunders, then
I mean, like if Mike Evans goes down in week one for the year, like Hargraves did,
right? You know,
that's a bit of a game.
But I would
for
say
sure.
that kind of the way that it's set up right here, I don't think you franchise tag him. I think you get your answer at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And I think that 5 years is plenty of time. And if you try to tell yourself that it's not, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah. I just think though that Bruce Arians. I mean, look, if Jameis goes, so does Jason Light. And if Jason Light goes, then you wonder what time,
right?
How much of a long-term
really
Bruce Arians is here.
This gets
starts
really ugly if Jameis can't do it.
Yeah,
right.
That's the only
reason that Arians is here, though. Arians is here because he thinks that Jameis can.
If you look at Jameis's stats the first 4 years compared to other quarterbacks, and Tom Bassinger would hate this, but I'm going to do it. You know, if you look at him, he's comparable to some of the better quarterbacks. The difference is the turnovers. Most turnovers in the league, other than Blake Bortles, since since Jameis came into the league.
Right.
Really, you know, people were have been asked a million times this offseason, you know, can Bruce Arians fix Jameis Winston? Bruce Arians just has to convince Jameis Winston not to commit so many turnovers. He's fine in other aspects of the game.
Yeah.
I think his completion percentage, you know, his leadership, his work ethic, all of those things he's well liked among his teammates. It's just the turnovers.
Right.
You fix that, and I think you have an above-average quarterback that's pushing into that top tier, top 10 quarterback.
Trevor, you're talking about last year and Jameis, and we're talking about those division games, right, against Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game where he comes back and gets his first start. And threw for over 300 yards, four touchdowns, but two interceptions.
Yeah.
If they have one interception,
and
they
one
win
of
that
a,
game.
I remember one of them in particular was just like, why
in
are
the
you
end zone.
Throwing
yeah.
that ball?
Yeah.
It's just, and that's the weird stuff. But, you know, we've talked about this ad nauseum with Jameis Winston, but I honestly think that certainly you don't want to turn the ball over. I mean, you want to limit that as much as you can, but especially knowing that Arians is going to be much more of a vertical offense than what people seem to, think it might be different than Dirk Cutter. I mean, it's still going to, they're still going to push the ball down the field.
Yeah.
I think that Jameis, even with all of his turnovers last year, they would have won a decent amount more games if he was better at accuracy deep down the field.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't hit people deep down the field. And that's the difference
It was DeSean Jackson. It was DeSean Jackson. He had no problem. I mean, there were a couple throws to Mike Evans where Jameis likes to use that boundary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the cornerback inside the receiver boundary.
Right.
And Mike Evans caught the ball and then had to run out of bounds because he had nowhere to go.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, hitting Mike is different than hitting DeSean.
Right.
Because Mike goes out of bounds right away. DeSean doesn't. You need to be able to hit plays that are between the hashes.
I agree.
Hit deep down the field. Mike's not running those routes.
Well, I think the biggest...
You've still got to be able to hit them.
Yeah, the biggest thing you're going to see in Bruce Arians' offense, because they're both vertically based, they're both... Whether it's Dirk or Bruce, they both have got the deep throw element to it. Jameis confirmed that today. But the difference is Dirk liked to take those shots down the sidelines, between the hash and the sidelines, and where Bruce, and you can get this from watching film, you can get this from reading the quarterback whisper, his favorite shots are down the seam.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is because the Stephon Gilmores, the Patrick Petersons, the big money cover guys are on the outside.
Right.
And where Bruce wants to attack is safeties, linebackers, mm-hmm.
and
nickel
corners. O.J. Howard and Chris Godwin, those two guys can absolutely exploit the middle of the field.
Absolutely. Not just that, but even Mike Evans, instead of hitting Mike down the sidelines, a deep post. Right?
Yeah.
And
hey, Trevor, guess what we saw during training camp? I mean, during the off-season workouts. Screen passes to running backs.
They actually happened.
Actually, that's in the playbook.
Yes. Yeah. Out there on the practice field, we actually saw screens.
You know where the linemen kind of hold their block for a few seconds to take off down the field? Yeah. We actually saw that.
Yeah, they kind of like trick the defensive linemen. Yeah.
Never. Oh, no. Yeah. You beat me. You're going to get the quarterback.
We also didn't see any bubble screens that Adam Humphries
So if
Adam
Donovan Smith's
either.
Getting worked around the edge, they're actually going to counter it with play calling?
Couple drag routes we saw. I know you're thinking, yes, absolutely.
No. Couldn't be.
Quick slants.
In Tampa?
Saw it.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be one of the biggest things that helps Jameis Winston is it's not just teaching him to make the smart play, but giving him a smart play to make. Because he talked about, he's like, today when he was talking about when they were doing their QB class, and he said, Ryan Griffin went deep on a third down play, and he looks at Jameis and he goes, what would you have done there? He goes, I would have hit Cam Brate. He goes, good, because it's third down play, that's a safe play, you want to get a first down. He said, now what if that play was on first down? He goes, I'm going for the home run. Now there were plays, just like we talk about, every screen pass was a little bubble to Adam Humphries. It was so predictable. How many times, I mean, I could look back and look at Dirt Cutter's play calling or Todd Monken's play calling, same offense, where it's a third down play, you have two wide receivers on the outside, and then you have a running back coming out of the backfield, but you don't have a crossing route. You don't have an out route. You don't have a post route. You don't have a corner route. If you are not hitting that running back coming out in the flat or a little angle route, your only option is throwing it downfield. Mm-hmm. And then Jameis Winston on third down has to wait for that play to develop. If there's any pressure, which there was on damn near every pass play he threw, he's escaping the pocket, and then he's trying to scramble around, make a decision, and he's more often than not just throwing it down to two wide receivers who are running deep because those are the only options he had.
Now, I'm not going to say that they didn't do any of this, but I feel like with Dirk's offense and the way that they went about things, they went about it in a very confident way, and it obviously worked. They put up a lot of numbers on offense, but I feel like every week they kind of went into something saying, this is our offense, this is how we run it, we're good enough to compete against any defense, we're going to put up points. And I get it, that's a confident way to play football, and you like that confidence, but I felt like, you know, the more I learn about the Patriots make things so simple, and people look at the Patriots and go, how are they so elite with, like, you know, Julian Edelman? Julian Edelman's good, don't get me wrong, but, you know, they did it with Wes Welker before him and all this kinds of stuff. And, you know, Chris Hogan's a guy that, you know, nobody knows. He played lacrosse before he played football, and now they're making this guy into, like, an all-star deep threat.
Right. I think, to your point, the reason why the Patriots are such a step ahead of everybody is because they don't have an offense. They don't have a defense. It's a week to week offense and a week to week defense.
They're attacking weaknesses.
Exactly.
And they use their pieces, which are good.
Right.
And they go, all right, tell me where this defense is weak this week. That's what we're going to attack. Yeah. And I just did not see the Bucs do a lot of that. And the main component, I've said this before, is with DeSean Jackson.
Yeah.
How are you not lining DeSean Jackson up in the slot? Confusing them, putting two tight ends out there, whatever it is, getting a super mismatch because this guy is so elite with the ball in his hands.
Sure. If you look at DeSean Jackson's production, it was at the beginning of the season. And to your point, Taylor, the offense was predictable. Go back and look at the scores of those games. The 40-point games are at the beginning. And then once the Bears figured out what they're doing,
they're running
all of a sudden,
the same offense.
They ran the same offense the entire season. When you saw that Adam Humphries bubble screen, like you were talking about, always on the left side of the field. It was never on the right side of the field. Never to Damar Dotson's side. It was always to Donovan Smith's side. It was very predictable. And it's like, you know, when you're running those plays that worked in week one and they're not working by week eight, you have to add some new wrinkles. You've got to incorporate some new things, some new elements, some new schemes, different formations.
Yeah.
And we just didn't see that at all. It was like an offense built around hubris and arrogance saying, well, we just have to execute it better. No, the other teams they've caught on to you and they're shutting it down.
Yep.
Speaking of new wrinkles, I see you've got a few new ones, Scott. How old are you now?
I'm 47.
47. That's a perfect age to get out on the water and do a little fishing. You know that?
We've done some fishing this summer.
We've done some fishing this summer.
We have.
And it makes no sense, Where Trevor. Don't transition? Even bother to ask. We just...
It's Segway, baby.
Where is Segway?
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of new
just
wrinkles.
Ride the Segway.
Speaking of new wrinkles, Scott's wrinkled up a few lines I had to fix for him while we were fishing recently, but he's learning, getting better. We were able to go attack the lizard fish. We are lizard fish kings. High five.
We're not.
We are master lizard fishermen, which is not anything to brag about, but T.A. Mahoney's hooked Scott and his son up with some great rod and reel combos. the last few weeks, and we were able to get in some fishing trips
down
at Longboat Key. Had a good time. But T.A. Mahoney's, again, I went in, told them what we were looking for, the type of fishing we were going to do them. They put the rod and reels together, spooled them up for us, and we were ready to go fishing the next day. That's the kind of place T.A. Mahoney's is. If you want to get out on the water, if you're a novice, if you haven't fished in a long time, like Scott and his son hadn't in a while, they're the place to go to kind of teach you and get you the type of thing you need. When you go to the big box store, you just get your stuff, you go to the counter, they take your money. T.A. Mahoney's will help you out. They'll give you some tips. Heck, they'll tell you where to fish, what baits to use, all of those things. But they're not just for fishing. If you have boating needs, if you've got a new boat and you need to equip it with a power pole, maybe some new electronics, T.A. Mahoney's is the place to do it. And most importantly, on my way to Anna Marie the other day, Scott, I saw two boats on the side of 75. One had a flat tire. One looked like the axle went bad. Yep. Go get your trailer maintained. T.A. Mahoney's in Tampa has been doing it since 1948, the year Scott Reynolds was born.
Nope.
T.A. Mahoney's. You can find them online at T.A. Mahoney Co. No, it's just T.A. Mahoney. I can't remember what it is.
T.A. Mahoney.com.
Yeah, T.A. Mahoney.com. Find them online. Go see Mark. Go see Mike. Go see Matt. Big Bucks fans and proud supporters of the Pewter Nation podcast.
All right. One of the cool things, too, is when the times we've been fishing, I haven't had to use the flare gun yet.
You have not. You have not. You try. You almost did when you saw that shark chasing that tarpon at the end of the dock.
It was exciting. Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. He almost shot. I was like, you can't do that, Scott. Yeah. You can't. It's illegal to shoot sharks with flare guns.
You told me like to shoot the flare gun up in the sky, not like at a shark.
Right, right. It's only for distress calls is why you shoot flare guns.
All right.
Which
or 4th of July.
Which very predictable, overly enthusiastic, blissfully ignorant training camp quote do you believe more? That Noah Spence looks better than ever, or that Ronald Jones looks like his old self?
Neither.
Which one?
Not buying it until I see it.
Yeah, you got to show me these things. Both, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because
how
both
many years
of those
now are we in a row?
Both
that
of
Noah
those
Spence
when I heard
looked
that,
as good as he's ever looked.
The Noah Spence thing is killing me.
And here's the thing: I like Noah Spence. He's a really good guy.
You can't help but like him because he looks like he'll kill you if you don't.
Well, no, he and I, we've got a good rapport.
He gives you dirty looks when you're not looking.
That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't say he's my guy, but like, I mean.
Have you guys ever hung out?
No, but we've talked at
Do you
one
have
buck
his phone
place.
Number?
No, I don't.
Okay, never mind. Keep going.
Okay, anyways.
Point made. No further questions, Your Honor.
Yeah, Rojo did the training camp diary with us last summer. Some would say we caused Rojo's
the training camp
bad
diary
season.
Curse.
Yeah, but it really wasn't the case.
Right.
That was all poor blocking up front, and I think Rojo would agree. But the thing is he's a good guy. Like, we got to know him last year. He's a good guy.
Sure.
These are two good guys. Having said that, I don't believe the hype. I got to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't – again, you have to go back to the Myron Lewis, you know, well, this is going to be his year deal, you know, him and Noah Spence. Now, again, I would still put my money on Noah Spence over Myron Lewis.
Yeah. What I like about Noah Spence is – he's shown me in his rookie season 5.5 sacks, 3 forced fumbles. He can do it. It's just a matter of doing it now.
Well, again, we talk about, and Trevor mentioned this, if Jameis can't do it under Bruce Arians, is he going to be able to do it?
Right.
If Noah Spence can't do it in a Todd Bowles-style defense, then
he needs
to find something else to do next year.
Yeah, yeah. And I was talking with Kevin Minter for the Bucs training camp diary, and he was singing Noah Spence's praises. I mean, and this was a guy that saw Noah last year because Kevin Minter was an injury replacement for Quan Alexander midseason. And so he was around, and he saw Noah Spence not get active, not play at all under Brenson Buckner, who, you know, there was a little bit of a falling out there. And he says that he'd just been so impressed with Noah, the way he's attacked it, the way he feels more at home standing up as an outside linebacker. It fits his body type better. That's great, Kevin. I still want to see it.
Right. Yeah, I'm
no,
still...
No, the pad's got to come on.
I'm still more impressed with Noah from the Bible than Noah Spence. I mean, all day long.
Well, it's hard to be... That's a pretty righteous Noah.
Yeah, it's a pretty great Noah.
Yeah, save
it's
mankind.
A lot to live up to if you've got that name.
Yeah. Save Mankind.
Or Noah Wiley from ER.
Listen, man, that's actually going to come in 2x2, all right?
That's right.
It's biblical. No,
two of each.
I think that...
You'll have 32 at the end of the year.
The part, I'm obviously very cautiously optimistic about anything Noah Spence at this point, just because his weight's been so different, and we've talked about this every single offseason, him coming in. But, I mean, I will say, not that I want to drink too much of the Kool-Aid, but this defense should be better for him.
When's the last time you drank Kool-Aid? That's just an underrated thing. I actually bought a Fruit Punch Kool-Aid the other day.
When is the last
it's pretty
time
good.
I drank Kool-Aid? With or without alcohol in it?
Well, what am I thinking?
Is
I'm talking about
the
millennial.
To drink
well,
age?
I mean, you know, when I was a kid, probably, you know, drinking
yeah,
high C or whatever.
I drank sugar as a kid, but I can't remember the last
time. You
just
replace all the sugar with alcohol now?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I do with pretty much everything at this point.
Okay, you might have a problem.
yeah.
You might need to seek medical help.
But yeah, if we're drinking
people
the Kool-Aid.
People always say they're drinking the Kool-Aid, but really.
I'm 100% drinking the Kool-Aid on no spends. I'm ready to get hurt again. Because when
he'd get hurt again. Oh, so is Noah.
When the Bucks drafted him, I was like, great value. Like, got in a little trouble, got
kicked out
of Ohio State.
Of course.
And here we go.
Everybody
he had 5.5
when
sacks.
It happened,
and I was like,
you know?
Sweet, this is awesome. And then he had like a huge weight loss, and I was like, sweet, he's shredded. He's going to be awesome. And he did nothing.
Well, I mean,
and
his,
then he had like
his
huge
most productive
gain.
Year was when he was in the 230s, was it?
Yeah.
What
yeah,
did he weigh that first
like,
year when he got
238?
Yeah, something yeah. like that. So he was high 230s, yeah. and he got all the way up to like 255.
Last
and it's
year,
like,
yeah.
okay, I get the durability thing, but you're obviously too big. You know, I watch this doing stuff for draft prospects. I'll see this all the time. Like from year to year, I'll watch. Normally, it's the sophomore to junior bump that a lot of weight and a lot of strength can happen. And a lot of these guys really think like, oh, I'm just going to put a lot of weight on. It's going to help me take on pounding in the trenches a little bit better. I'm going to be more durable, all that kinds of stuff. But then you just get slower. You know, yeah. if you're moneymaker is predicated on speed. You have to take that into account. For Noah, I don't know if he did.
Well,
I think that he just gained a lot of weight and it just took away his speed.
And I think he tried to fit something, a mold that wasn't him. He was drafted and he is fit to be this stand-up outside linebacker in Todd Bowles' system. I think that's where he's going
to
be most productive.
Well, to be fair, he was not the only player drafted to not fit a Mike Smith defense.
Okay,
but,
Vernon Hargreaves,
you know,
Carlton Davis. But anyway, I think he had to gain weight because he goes, okay, if I'm going to be playing a base 4-3 in
with
my hand in the ground, that's what I'm going to have to do. And back to I've been sold every year on Noah Spence from his rookie year to him gaining weight to him losing weight to him being healthy from his shoulder surgery. And at the end of last year, I finally said I've had enough. I'm not going to do it anymore. He can't get me to buy in again. And then the Bucks got Todd Bowles.
Yep.
And then he finally gets an opportunity to be in the position I think he's been in since he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And gall darn it, I'm sold again. And if I'm going to jump in the water, I'm just going to jump in. I'm not going in slowly. And I'm just... He's going
to
be awesome.
You think Noah Spence had anything to do with JPP's car accident? Maybe like, you know, put some oil in the street or something?
Calm down.
I'm just saying.
Calm down.
I don't know. I'm just, you got to, I'm a reporter.
They
you got to think
play,
of these
you,
things.
They weren't going to play the same position. They were going to still let JPP
Yeah, but he's
going to
get more opportunities without JPP.
No, I mean, he has to. So again, that kind of brings up like the state of this defensive line,
I'm
right?
Just saying, if I'm Carl Nassib, I'm checking my tires.
2 years ago, they had the least amount of sacks in the NFL. And we watched that season front to back, and
22.
It was pitiful.
Yep.
It was bad. And now this team, and then they got Jason Pierre-Paul, mm-hmm. and things changed a little bit. They didn't change a lot other than Jason Pierre-Paul, but they changed because he was there.
Yeah.
Now he's not there. Gerald McCoy's not there either.
Well, supposedly Jason
Pierre-Paul.
I know
Dominic Sue is there, but he's a new face, you know?
Supposedly Jason Pierre-Paul is a quick healer. I don't know.
There's no way he's going to be ready by September.
Well, yeah, I think October is the timetable. Because I wanted to kind of pin Bruce down, and it said, what's the best-case scenario? What's the most optimistic scenario? Is it September? Is it October? And he said October. Now, is it October 1 or is it October 31st? That's a whole another month of football there. So we'll see. I mean, you know, if it was a shoulder, a knee, an ankle, you know, a broken arm, it's so different. But, man, you're talking about a neck injury and banging heads with offensive tackles.
Mm-hmm.
Every player or making a tackle and sticking your neck in there.
Right.
Man.
I hope he goes back and he goes old school and wears the old neck roll thing.
Yeah, he
That'd
should.
Be cool.
You and every Bucks fan who actually remembers the glory days wants him to go full neck roll.
Like
yes.
Scott Brantley, right?
Yeah, Brantley, David Logan.
Basically
John
just like
Cannon.
Full on.
Leroy Salmon had one
pretty
too.
Much, pretty much everybody in the 70s.
Yeah.
And they had those full arm pads.
Yes.
Too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. No, when these players get old, they don't give a damn about aesthetics. They don't care.
Right.
They're wearing all the rubber pads on their elbows.
Yeah.
They're wearing the giant neck roll stuff. They got tape around here and be like, dude, you look clunky. You'd be like, nah, I look comfortable. All right? Like, I'm not getting grass burned or whatever. Like, I'm here to play football and get out. So,
Scott and I are going to London, and so he and I have been practicing our Londonish language.
You just went to France, man.
That's cool. I didn't want to go.
You went to Paris.
You're right. I'm the most experienced one on the podcast. That's fine. I'll take Mark's spot.
That's true. We'll thumb wrestle for it.
Okay, deal.
We can't arm wrestle. You'll beat me. I can't even open a jar of mayonnaise these days. But look.
So that's why you got Douglas lifting weights.
So we're going to London, and we've been practicing our Londonese by going to Yeoman's, and because it's an amazing American but British-themed pub over by Amelie Arena downtown, and there's one also over in the Kissimmee area as well. Yeoman's has 10 lunch specials for under $10, including their amazing fish and chips. Scott and I have been eating tea and crumpets every day at 5 o'clock. We've been watching My Fair Lady quite often, and Austin Powers.
Austin Powers,
listening
for sure.
To a lot of Beatles music as we get ready, but mainly we've been going to Yeoman's.
I've really been listening to more Judas Priest, actually.
Are they from London?
That's British metal, yeah.
Oh, really?
Of course.
Well, you should listen to Def Leppard. They're also from England.
Yeah, and I listen to Def Leppard, too. Absolutely.
Just don't drive off the road like their drummer did, lose an arm before we go. Hey, can we go visit that site where he crashed his car and see if, like, a piece of his arm is still there?
I think they've maybe cleaned that up since then.
I guess it was
in
the early 90s or late 80s. But anyway, we Yeoman's Cask and Line, located downtown Tampa, not far from Amelie Arena. If you're going to the Lionel Richie concert Sunday night, which I'm hoping to go to because I'm a big Commodores fan.
Yep.
Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night at Amelie.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and hold over that. But if I do, I'm definitely going to go over to Yeoman's, where I go a lot of times before the Lightning games.
Me too.
One of my favorite places downtown. Great food, great atmosphere.
Yeah, first closed now, so yeah. I've been to Yeoman's a couple times.
Yeah, Yeoman's is a good place, so make sure to go check them out. You can check them out online as well. They're part of Ford's Garage. It's the same ownership group that owns Ford's Garage and also Yeoman's.
Oh, I didn't
Yeoman's
know that.
As well.
Wow. Yeah.
And we're going to be doing some watch parties, some happy hours at Yeoman's. And also
I've been craving
Ford's
Garage.
Well, you've come to the right place.
Yeah.
I've been craving Ford's Garage.
We might
honestly
have a little hookup for you.
You might need to go see me after this. Might be able to help you out.
Now I know why I came back to the podcast. I know why God brought me back.
Ford's or Yeoman's, check them out. Make sure to thank them for being a proud sponsor of the Pewter Nation podcast. We certainly appreciate them. Check them out both online. Check out their menus and check out Yeoman's 10 lunch specials for under $10. All right,
can I go to all 10 for $10?
Yeah, if you've got $100, you can do that.
No. I meant, like, can I get all 10?
Yeah.
For under $10?
Yeah, all 10 or under $10.
Yeah, including but, like, I want all 10 of them,
like, at one time
under $10.
No, that doesn't work that way. No, you have to pay $10
per meal. I'm just making
meal.
Sure here, because I don't want to walk in expecting something.
I'll take those 10 things, and here's my
$10
bill.
And have to give somebody a dirty look, right? I don't want to start, I only have $10 in my pocket,
sorry,
and then have to start cleaning some dishes.
Yeah, we got a Hamilton. No Benjamin. All right, so anyway, well, this has been fun, guys. Let's wrap it up. Anything else we need to talk about real quick?
I'm just going to say that condolences to Devin White for losing Daisy May. That was some really sad news.
You too.
Yeah.
That was
hard.
We
spent entirely too much time on Daisy May at the beginning of this press conference.
Well, that was because of Jenna.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Did you see me fall?
I thought you were about to fall out of your chair
the questions were fine, but when we got
to
the
grumpy old man.
No, it's a...
The man! It's like losing a dog!
Again, it's not a person. I love dogs.
Yeah,
I love
but you'd
horses.
Be sad.
I lost my donkey Rambo last October.
Okay,
we didn't
and
have a
were
press
you
conference
sad?
For me. Yeah, for like an hour.
You didn't have a press conference for me. You're not playing middle linebacker for the Bucks.
You know how much money this guy's going to save? Horses are expensive, dude.
They are expensive.
That's why my parents gave
He'd
me a donkey.
He'd pay all of it.
Well, that's true. It was very sad, and you could tell it bothered him. And you know what? And I hate to say it, but it came at the right time for this guy because it literally happened right before he needed to report to training camp. And it is a distraction for him. He's able to focus on something else.
He said it was something that, you know, obviously, like, in no way is this a good thing that happened. But he said it was nice to be able to come down to Tampa, be surrounded by a lot of people who he now considers his family. So, I mean, it's tough for him, but, you know, hopefully it's something where he's able to even band closer to this team. Because, like Bruce Arians said, they need him. They need this entire rookie class. And so
I'm going to go on record and say, because this is a guy that's been talked about as a potential NFL defensive rookie of the
year.
Just
say it. He's better than Ray Lewis.
No, I'm not going to say that. But what I'm going to say is What I'm going to say
is... Go ahead and quote it. Scott Reynolds, PeterPort.com. Seen on Pro Football Talk tomorrow. Devin White is better than Ray Lewis ever could be.
I will say that in about 10 years, but not right now. I'm going to hold off. Okay, I'm going to give Devin a decade, and then we'll talk. But
I'm going to keep this audio.
But go ahead.
TMZ.
I'll say he's better than Quan Alexander.
He's better than Quan Alexander, yes. And he's going to get 6 sacks this year as an inside. Yeah, 6.
Wow.
And talking with Kevin Minter for...
Hey, Gap Blitz, baby.
Yeah, and talking with Kevin Minter for the diary, he said that the inside linebackers and safeties will blitz more than any other spot. He's like, don't be surprised if our inside linebackers have as many sacks as our outside linebackers.
Yeah. When you pair it with press coverage, and I was actually watching a little... Sean Murphy Bunting before the press conference, just because I knew that Carlton could play a little bit of press. Yeah. I was watching his tape in college, and I was just looking at his technique and everything. And they, you know, when you play close press coverage, it gives you the ability to come up the middle and just overwhelm that A-gap, because the only remedy for overwhelming an A-gap is getting the ball out of your hands quick. And if you're playing close press coverage and you're hand fighting within the first, let's say, 2 seconds of the play, you're sticking with a guy close to the line of scrimmage. Then all of a sudden, as a quarterback, you're panicking. You got pressure up the middle.
Yeah.
Your first read didn't work because he's not open because there's press coverage against him. That's the aggressiveness that
your running back has to stay in the block.
Right.
So
that's what I think.
One less outlet.
Everybody loves to be aggressive, right? It's hard to pull it off.
Yeah.
So you're hoping that the coaching staff really knows how to teach, because it's a young group too. I think they have a lot of skill sets that set up well to be aggressive on defense. But it's going to take a lot. These are still young kids. They're still learning in the NFL for the first time. Even some of the guys who have been in the league for 2 to 3 years. I didn't love the coaching staff that they had before. So I really do think that you were learning something new almost for the first time. And so it'll be interesting to see
the
how
the buzz in the building in terms of who's going to lead this team in sacks is Shaq Barrett. That's the buzz in the building.
Yeah.
And that's the guy that Bruce mentioned today that he really thought he could be.
They need him.
He could be a guy.
Denver
really
liked him.
Denver
fans, when I talked to them about losing Shaq, they were like, yeah, we didn't want to lose him, but we just figured we would, because Bradley Chubb, Von Miller, you know, they've already got the guys on the edge.
Right.
Barrett was kind of an afterthought. They weren't going to pay him, even though they liked him. But now he gets an opportunity to really be a difference maker here.
All right. That was Trevor Sikkema for Matthew Matera. For Mr. Jenkins and Scott Reynolds, I'm Mark
Call
Cook.
Call him the Grizz now.
What?
Call him Grizz now.
Hey, Grizz. I like six chins better. He admitted that.
Damn.
Are you gaining weight? Are you actually gaining weight? You talk about going to the gym all the time.
I'm in, I'm out, I'm up, I'm down. It's a fluctuation, man. It's a long year.
Time is
relative, weight is whatever.
He's like the Noah Spence of PeterReport.com.
Exactly.
I go through a really structured
yet he's
regimen.
Never walked in here ripped. When he does that, then we'll call him Noah Spence.
Yeah.
It's coming, right?
I'm going to be disruptive. I'm not going to be getting 12 sacks off the edge.
For Noah Jenkins and Scott Reynolds, I'm Mark Cook saying we'll see you next week with another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
Out.
Out.
Out.